I want you to look at the nearest metal object. Maybe it's the leg of your desk or a spoon or even the frame of your car. It feels solid, right? Permanent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could shrink down, way down, and stand on the surface of that metal, you wouldn't see a quiet, solid block. You'd see a chaotic, violent world.
That's a dramatic way to start, but you aren't wrong.
You'd see crystals fighting for space, layers of rock-hard material next to layers of soft iron, and you'd see that the only reason it isn't shattering is because of this very specific atomic handshake.
And we often think of steel as this monolithic gray block.
Mm-hmm.
But mechanically, it's a composite material. It's a relationship between two very different things trying to work together under stress.
And that relationship is exactly what we are unpacking today. We have a dense chapter on the mechanical properties of perlite.
A specific microstructure of steel.
Right. And we're going to look at why it stretches, why it snaps, and weirdly, how splitting it apart can actually save it. But before we get into the weeds of perlite, we have to start with the bond itself. Why can I bend a spoon and it stays bent, but if I try to bend, say, a diamond or even the graphite in my pencil, it just snaps?
It all comes down to the nature of the connection between the atoms. I mean, if you look at something like solid argon, the atoms are barely holding hands.
Okay.
Now, they're using van der Waals forces. They're just very weak attractions.
Yeah.
Or look at graphite. It has layers.
Right. Like sheets of paper stacked up.
Exactly. And those sheets can slide over each other, which is what makes graphite a great lubricant. But the bond between the sheets is terrible. It can't support any shear stress. You try to bend it, the layers just peel apart.
It fails instantly. But metals don't do that.
No. The metallic bond is unique. It's abiding. It allows atoms to literally slide past one another into entirely new positions without letting go.
So they can switch neighbors?
They can switch neighbors and still maintain the integrity of the material. There's no other class of material in the known universe that offers this combination of strength and, well, forgiveness.
Forgiveness is an interesting word for steel, because we always hear about the new wonder materials. You know, every few years there's a headline. Graphene is 200 times stronger than steel.
Ah, yes.
But our source makes a pretty aggressive counterargument to that. It basically says graphene is a bit of a diva.
It is a diva. Look, graphene is theoretically perfect. If you have a microscopic flake of it, sure, it's incredibly strong.
But we don't build with flakes.
No, engineering doesn't happen at the microscale. We build bridges, cars, skyscrapers. And when you scale a material up to that size, you inevitably introduce defects, scratches, holes, impurities.
And graphene can't handle those?
Not really. Materials that rely on perfection fail catastrophically when they aren't perfect. But steel assumes you're going to mess it up.
Hmm.
Because of that metallic bond, steel can tolerate voids, inclusions, and cracks, and still carry a load.
Mm.
It is the wonder material precisely because it works when it isn't perfect.
That is a great reframe. So we aren't looking for perfection, we're looking for tolerance. So let's look at how perlite handles the abuse we throw at it. The text breaks this down into three pillars: ductility, toughness, and fatigue.
Three very different ways of feeling. It's important to distinguish them.
Absolutely. Let's start with ductility, the art of the stretch. If I'm an engineer, how do I actually measure how stretchy a piece of steel is?
Well, you torture it. You do what's called a tensile test. You take a bar of steel, you clamp both ends, and you pull.
Okay.
And at first, the bar stretches uniformly. It gets longer and a little bit thinner, just like stretching a piece of chewing gum.
But eventually, something changes. The text talks about plastic instability, which sounds like a technical way of saying it's about to break.
It is, but the mechanism is fascinating. So as you pull the metal, two things are fighting each other. On one side, the metal's getting stronger because you're working it. That's called strain hardening.
Okay.
But on the other side, the bar is getting thinner, which means there's less metal cross-section to hold the load.
Okay, so it's a race, getting stronger versus getting thinner.
Exactly. Plastic instability is the moment where the bar's getting thinner faster than it can get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The material basically gives up in one specific spot.
And it forms a neck.
It forms a neck. It starts to look like an hourglass.
And this is dangerous.
Very. Because once that neck forms, the physics change completely. You aren't just pulling the atoms apart linearly anymore inside that narrow neck. You get something called stress triaxiality.
That sounds intense. What does that mean for the atoms?
It means the metal inside the neck is being pulled in all three dimensions at once. It's trapped. It wants to shrink to accommodate the pull, but it can't because it's attached to the rest of the bar. And that That is where the void nucleates.
A void? A hole?
A literal hole, yeah, starting inside the metal. In perlite, which is made of layers, this usually happens at the cementite layers.
The hard, brittle part of the steel.
That's the one. Under that triaxial stress, the cementite cracks. So the hard skeleton breaks first. It breaks, opening up a tiny void. Then, as you keep pulling, those voids grow. They link up with their neighbors. And eventually, snap. That's the cup and cone fracture you see on a broken bolt.
This brings us to what I'm calling the perlite paradox. The data in the chapter showed something that, I mean, it didn't make sense to me at first.
What was that?
Well, usually if you make a metal stronger, it becomes less ductile, right? Stiff and brittle.
Mm-hmm, generally.
But the source says that if you refine the perlite, if you make those layers of hard cementite and soft ferrite incredibly thin and packed tight, the steel gets nearly twice as strong.
That's standard hall patch strengthening. More barriers means higher strength.
Sure. But the paradox is that the uniform elongation, the amount it stretches before it starts necking, stays exactly the same. It's around 0.08 strain or 8% stretch. It doesn't matter if the layers are chunky or microscopic, it stretches the same amount. Why doesn't the stronger stuff snap sooner?
It's because perlite is a democracy, but the ferrite has the majority vote. Perlite is mostly ferrite, the soft iron. The hard cementite acts as reinforcement, but the ferrite is the matrix holding it all together.
So the soft stuff dominates the behavior.
The ferrite is incredibly tolerant. So even when the hard cementite plates start cracking, the soft ferrite that's surrounding them just kind of flows around the crack. It holds the whole assembly together.
Ah.
So the point at which the whole system becomes unstable, that 8% stretch, that's dictated by the soft ferrite, not the hard cementite.
So the soft stuff is doing the heavy lifting of keeping the team together. That's fascinating.
In terms of uniform ductility, yeah.
There was another weird twist in this section involving pressure. Hydrostatic pressure. The text implies you can squeeze the metal to stop it from breaking.
This is one of those physics concepts that feels totally counterintuitive. Mm. If you take a block of steel and you lower it to the bottom of the ocean, you are applying massive hydrostatic pressure. You're squeezing it from all sides.
Does it change shape?
No. It just shrinks in volume, a tiny, tiny amount. But if you try to pull that steel apart while you're squeezing it,
the voids can't open.
Precisely. Remember, failure starts with those tiny holes nucleating. A hole needs volume to exist. If the outside pressure is crushing the material, the voids physically cannot expand.
So you can stretch it further.
Much, much further before it breaks, becomes artificially more ductile.
And they mentioned a really cool application for this, healing 3D printed parts.
Right. Additive manufacturing 3D printing metal. It's amazing, but it often leaves microscopic pores or cracks in the print. It's almost unavoidable.
Right.
But we can use this pressure principle. You put the part in a chamber, heat it up to, say, 1150 degrees Celsius, and hit it with 100 megapascals of pressure.
That is a lot of pressure.
It is. And it literally forces the material to flow into those pores. It seals the cracks. It's like performing surgery on the atomic level to heal the manufacturing defects.
That's incredible. It's like self-healing steel. I want to pivot now to a cousin of steel that the text spent some time on, cast iron.
Ah, the graphitic iron. This is where things get messy.
It seemed to have a completely different failure mode. Perlite has layers, but cast iron has these nodules of graphite, little spheres of carbon.
Yeah, and you should think of those nodules as just pre-existing holes. Graphite is so soft compared to iron that mechanically, it might as well not be there. It's a void waiting to happen.
The text used this really vivid image to describe what happens when you stretch the iron. It called it onion peeling.
It's a great visual. Imagine you have a soft rubber ball encased in clay. If you pull the clay, it's going to pull away from the top and bottom of the ball. It separates.
So the metal literally peels off the graphite sphere?
Yes. It debonds at the poles of the sphere. But here's another interesting contrast. If the metal matrix is soft like ferrite, you get that peeling. The metal just flows away from the graphite.
But what if the matrix is hard perlite?
The perlite doesn't want to flow. It's stiff.
Yeah.
It clamps down on that graphite nodule. It transfers all that stress right into the graphite until crack. The graphite sphere itself fractures internally.
So either way, the graphite is the weak link. It's just a question of whether the surrounding metal peels off or the graphite itself cracks.
Exactly. And that really limits how much cast iron can stretch.
Speaking of stretching, we have to talk about superplasticity, because that sounds like a superpower. The ability to stretch a metal hundreds of percent without breaking, like taffy.
Mm.
Can perlite do that?
As it comes out of the mill. No.
I sensed a but coming there.
There is a but. The problem with perlite is those interlocking layers. They act like a rigid frame. They can't slide past each other easily. To get superplasticity, that chewing gum behavior, you need the microscopic grains of the metal to be able to rotate and slide over one another.
So the layers are blocking the traffic.
They are the traffic jam. So to get superplasticity, you
Bruh.
have to destroy the perlite.
Destroy
You
it.
have to heat it and treat it until those long sheets of cementite break down into tiny separate spheres. We call it spheroidizing.
So instead of a layer cake, you have a chocolate chip cookie.
Perfect analogy. You have hard cementite chips floating in a soft, fairy dough. Once you have that structure, the grains are free to rotate. The material can flow. You can stretch it 500, 800%.
Wow. And it's the exact same chemical composition, same iron, same carb, but just arranging the atoms differently changes it from a stiff beam into taffy.
Structure dictates performance.
Yeah.
That is the golden rule of material science. You change the shape of the components, you change what the material is.
Let's move to the second pillar, toughness. Now, I'll admit, before I read this, I kind of use ductility and toughness interchangeably, but they are not the same thing.
Not at all. And mixing them up can get people killed.
Yeah.
Ductility is how much you can stretch. Toughness is how much energy you could absorb before you snap. Think of a car crash.
Okay.
You want the front of your car to crumple. You want it to deform. That crumpling is work. It's absorbing the kinetic energy of the crash so that energy doesn't go into your body. A material that is tough can take a massive hit,
Yeah.
deform wildly, and still not shatter.
And the enemy of toughness is the cold.
The cold is terrifying for steel. We've seen this in history, ships cracking in half in icy waters. The issue is with the ferrite. As the temperature drops, ferrite gets stronger. It resists moving.
That sounds like a good thing.
You would think so, but it reaches a tipping point. It gets so strong that it just refuses to move plastically, refuses to stretch. So when stress hits it, instead of bending, it just snaps. It switches from ductile tearing to cleavage.
Cleavage, like splitting a diamond.
Or splitting wood along the grain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It snaps along specific atomic plane, the planes, for the technical listeners. It's a fast, brittle, catastrophic fracture.
And perlite doesn't stop this. I mean, it has those layers. You'd think the crack would hit a layer and stop.
You would hope. But the research shows something called the bicrystal concept. Basically, a whole colony of perlite, a bundle of these layers, acts like a single crystal. The cleavage crack is, well, it's lazy. It finds a path through the ferrite layers and just zips right through them.
So the layers are just train tracks for the crack.
Pretty much. The hard cementite doesn't even slow it down. The crack just hops over or cuts right through.
But then we get to the part of the text that really surprised me. Delamination. Usually, if I hear delamination, I think of plywood rotting and falling apart. It sounds like a failure. But the source argues that delamination can actually make steel tougher.
This is one of the most fascinating mechanisms in fracture mechanics. To understand it, we have to go back to that triaxial stress we talked about earlier.
The constrained feeling.
Right. Imagine a thick, solid block of steel. If you try to bend it, the material in the very center is trapped. It's being pulled, but it's surrounded by other metal, so it can't contract.
Yeah.
It's under high triaxial stress. That makes it brittle, prone to snapping.
Okay.
Now, imagine that same block, but it's made of a stack of loose playing cards.
If I bend the deck of cards, they just slide over each other.
Exactly. Each card is thin. It's not constrained by the card next to it. It's in a state of plane stress, not triaxial stress. It's free to deform.
So thin sheets are naturally tougher than thick blocks because they have room to move.
Correct. Now, back to the steel. Sometimes we have impurities in steel-like manganese sulfide. They get flattened out when it's rolled. They create weak planes.
Weak spots running sideways.
Yes. When a crack comes rushing down through the steel, it hits one of these weak planes and bop. The steel splits sideways. It delaminates.
It turns itself from a solid block into a stack of cards.
It does. It effectively separates itself into thin ligaments. And because those ligaments are thin, they aren't constrained anymore. They can stretch. They can absorb energy.
Wow.
So by failing locally, by splitting sideways, the material saves the overall structure from snapping in half.
It sacrifices its structural unity to gain toughness.
It's a crack arrester. The main crack hits that split and loses all its energy. It's a brilliant, if accidental, safety mechanism.
I feel like I need to sit with that for a while. It fails a little bit to keep from failing completely. But we have one last pillar to cover, the silent killer, fatigue.
Fatigue is the most insidious failure mode. Ductility and toughness are about what happens when you overload the material now. Fatigue is about what happens when you underload it a million times.
The source describes a scenario where a component, an axle or a gear, is working fine. It's nowhere near its breaking point. But then on the millionth cycle, bang.
It's cumulative damage. And what's interesting is where it starts. It depends entirely on how hard you are pushing it.
There are two categories, high cycle and low cycle.
Right. If you are applying a huge load, that's low cycle fatigue, the damage starts at the surface, a scratch, a dent, a machining mark. The surface is where the stress is highest, so the crack starts there and digs in.
But what if the load is low, if I'm just gently vibrating the steel, but doing it for years and years?
Then the circuit usually holds up. The failure starts inside. It initiates at an inclusion, a tiny piece of slag, or a hard particle trapped deep within the steel matrix.
It dies from the inside out.
It does. The crack grows slowly, cycle by cycle, forming these beach marks inside the metal until the remaining material is just too weak to hold on, and then it suddenly snaps.
And does the material get weaker as you shake it? Or does it get tougher? The text had a section on cyclic softening versus hardening. This was a bit technical, so help me unpack it.
This is where the perlite spacing becomes critical again. It's another tug of war.
Explain that.
So you have dislocations, these little defects that move around to let metal bend. If you have fine perlite, a very tight spacing between layers, those dislocations are trapped. They don't have much room to move.
Okay.
As you cycle the load, they just shuffle back and forth. They get tired, in a sense. Mm. The material gets softer.
So fine layers equal cyclic softening.
Yes. But if the layers are coarse, if there's white spacing, the dislocations have a dance floor. They can move around, bump into each other, and get tangled up.
And tangles make it harder.
A tangle of dislocations acts like a knot. It hardens the material. So, of course, perlite actually gets stronger locally as you vibrate it. It undergoes cyclic hardening.
That is such a nuanced detail. If I'm building a bridge that's going to vibrate in the wind for 50 years, I can't just ask, is this steel strong? I have to ask, how far apart are the microscopic layers?
Absolutely.
Because that determines if it will get softer or harder over time.
You cannot separate the engineering from the microstructure. They are one and the same.
We've covered a lot of ground here. Voids, onions, self-healing, cleavage, delamination. It feels like the more we learn about steel, the less we actually know.
It really highlights the limits of our traditional tools. The text concludes with a really important point about modern science. For a century, we've used simple linear equations to predict steel behavior. You know, A plus B equals C.
But steel isn't linear.
No. It's chaotic. You have to account for the onion peeling and the cleavage and the inclusion size and the temperature. A human brain or a simple formula can't hold all those variables at once.
So where do we go?
We go to neural networks. We go to machine learning. We are feeding these massive data sets of microstructure into computers and letting the AI find the patterns that we miss. We're moving from theory to data-driven metallurgy.
That's a humbling thought. We've been forging iron for 3,000 years, and we're just now realizing we need artificial intelligence to really understand what's happening inside a spoon.
It keeps the job interesting.
I want to leave the listener with the final thought, something that really stuck with me from this deep dive. We started by talking about the perfect materials. Diamonds, graphene. We are obsessed with purity.
But purity is fragile.
Exactly. The story of steel is the story of imperfect things working together. It's the graphite peeling like an onion to relieve stress. It's the material splitting into laminates to stop a crack. It's the messy, chaotic mix of soft iron and hard cementite that keeps the world standing.
It's not about being unbreakable. It's about how you manage the break.
Maybe there's a lesson in that for all of us. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
My pleasure.
See you next time.